The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 4 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 6th of July. How are you all keeping? I hope you're well. Did you have a nice weekend? We are going to have a nice week of weather. Not as nice as the south of the country, but from Wednesday on, the winds will die. It'll become a bit more warm heading into the weekend and next week as well. So plenty to look forward to. But we're going to have to be watering our plants because we're going to see very little rain apparently over the next wee while, and nice and warm in the evenings too. So something potentially for you to look forward to if you like that type of weather. And we've got 2 hours to look forward to today with lots coming up on the programme, keeping you across all the big stories, all the big issues. And we want you to let us know if we've missed anything. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. Give us a call if that suits you better, 07491 25000, and email comments@highlandradio.com. If you're listening to the podcast or the repeat, feel free to send us an email or a WhatsApp and we'll pick it up and carry it into the next live programme. We were all devastated, weren't we, to learn of another fatality on Donegal's roads at the weekend. And of course, that leads the Donegal newspaper today, as it has our bulletins much of the weekend. A young man was tragically killed and three more people were hospitalised following a collision of two cars. The fatality occurred at Kinnego Cross in Ballymagan, outside Buncrana, on Saturday around 9 p.m. The young man was in his 20s and was pronounced dead at the scene. He was last night named as Aaron Friel, 21, from the Buncrana area. A hugely popular young man by all accounts. And, you know, you can see that in all of the tributes that have been paid to him. Clearly a very, very special young man. A passenger in the car is also in his 20s and was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital. In the second car, the driver, who's in his late teens, and a female passenger who is also in her late teens were also taken to hospital. My understanding is their injuries are not life-threatening, and we wish them a full and speedy recovery. And of course, our thoughts and prayers and sympathies are extended to Aaron's family, his friends as well. The emergency services who arrived on the scene, I'm sure there was a local priest arrived on that scene as well. And just the wider community, it's absolutely devastating and just the absolute worst news to hear. And I think Aaron's the eighth person to die on our roads so far this year, which is just unbelievable. The Derry News this morning, three men have been found not guilty of the murder of journalist Lyra McKee in Derry in 2019. Judge Mrs. Justice Smith is continuing to deliver her judgment in other charges in the long-running non-jury trial at Belfast Crown Court. Paul McIntyre, 58, of Kells Walk in Derry, Peter Kavanagh, 38, of Mary Street, and Jordan Gareth Devine, 25, of Bishop Street, faced a joint enterprise murder charge. Miss McKee, 29, died after being hit by a bullet as she stood close to police vehicles while observing disturbances in the Cregan area of Derry on April 18th, 2019. And many of us remember that date incredibly clearly. Several petrol bombs had been directed at police and a car was set on fire during chaotic scenes, which culminated in four shots being fired towards the new IRAs, claimed responsibility for the death of Miss McKee. And devastating for the families who have been enduring that trial for a long time now and would have been hopeful of a different outcome, but that is the process, and that were the findings. The Irish Times report that the new fast-track system has rejected 90% of asylum claims. So 9 out of 10 asylum seekers whose requests for international protection were assessed using a fast-track procedure now being rolled out on a permanent basis had their claims rejected by the state. Internal Department of Justice briefings said in trial operations of the accelerated system for deciding certain asylum claims, it was very encouraging. The new international protection system, which has entered into force under EU-wide asylum reforms, obliges the department to rule on application claims plus any appeal within an tight 12-week window. It applies to cases where the asylum seeker is from a country deemed safe or where they made an earlier asylum request under EU in another EU country. So far, 9 out of 10 of those have been rejected in a short period of time. Deportation orders, I'll read about that because that's quite critical as well, isn't it? The new statistics on deportation orders. Sorry. Figures from the trial operation since last year show 89% of asylum claims assessed using the fast-track process were refused. The new statistics are drawn from 2,272 claims for international protection. In a quarter of cases, justice officials had issued deportation orders to unsuccessful asylum applicants, and so far 84 people have departed or voluntarily left the state, a department spokesman says. So of the 2,272 claims, 90 were rejected, 90% were rejected, and 84 have left the state. So in terms of that side of things, the wheels seem to be moving quite slowly there. The Irish Daily Mail's front page story focuses on Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald doesn't want any more hunting ban motions to come before the party's membership as a fracturous internal row continues. The Irish Daily Mail can reveal a split in the party over whether to continue support for hunting traditions were reignited last week as a ban on coursing came before the door on Thursday. In a voice message obtained by the Mail, County Waterford Sinn Féin councillor and hunter Jim Griffin claimed Miss McDonald does not want her party to be drawn further into the row. The three-term councillor, and I'll turn to page four here, the three-term councillor and longtime member of the Woodstown Harriers Hunting Club said the Sinn Féin leader doesn't want to see any more of these motions before her members. It comes as pressure is ramping up on the party from fellow opposition TDs to prove its left-wing credentials by supporting a new ban on hare coursing. I wouldn't have thought hare coursing is to do with, you know, left, right or centrist type politics. It's about what you feel and what you think is the right thing. And the majority of people in this country believe it should be banned, according to one survey now. Again, I don't know. I know that survey was conducted like most surveys are, but 77% of people, urban and rural, want it banned. But obviously there's some pressure from the party to support the continued practice. This might be good news if you received a JD Sports voucher or gift card and you were of the view that it had expired. Well, multinational sportswear retailer JD Sports is to return thousands of euro in unspent gift card credit to customers in this country following an intervention from the state's consumer watchdog. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission said it has secured an undertaking from JD Sports to return almost €250,000 in unspent gift cards. So not insignificant, and some of that's going to be up this part of the world because there are JD Sports stores locally, aren't there? Well, the decision follows engagement by the CCPC with JD Sports about reports that gift cards had been sold to Irish consumers with incorrect expiry dates under gift voucher legislation introduced in Ireland in December 2019. Gift vouchers must be valid for at least 5 years. So I'm not sure if people would have gone, oh, well, that's out of date and chucked it out, or if they can still redeem it or whatever it might be. But anyway, might be a bit of good news for some of you out there today. And finally, Gardaí are hunting the killer of a young father who bled to death in a suspected punishment shooting gone wrong as officers begin their probe into the death of Mark Cullen, 39, in Dunlaoghaire in South County Dublin early yesterday. Sources confirmed he'd only been released from prison 2 weeks ago, and sources say he was shot once in the leg when he went to a prearranged meeting in a side street. The bullet severed an artery, causing massive blood loss and rapid death. A source said, in as much as a shooting could be accidental, this seems to be it. He bled out. Well, it's clearly not accidental. What a crazy thing to come out with. If you point a gun at someone, pull the trigger, it doesn't matter whether you were intended to kill them or not, or shoot them or not. I mean, you knew, or you should know, the likelihood of what could happen. But he was shot in the leg, stumbled out onto the street and died. It happened very quickly, this source said. Now, as we mentioned in the papers there, the family of Lyra McKee has said no stone will be left unturned to get justice after three men were found not guilty of her murder. Nicola Corner, the sister of Miss McKee, also called for an end to the culture of silence in Northern Ireland, which meant people did not come forward with information about the killing. Miss McKee, 29, died after being hit by a bullet as she stood close to police vehicles while observing disturbances in the Creggan area of Derry on the 18th of April 2019. The Assistant General Secretary of the National Union of Journalists is Seamus Dooley, and he joins us now. Hi, Seamus.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah.
I mean, your reaction to the outcome of this trial, Seamus?
Well, I was with the family and friends of Lyra on Friday, and of course, sharing their devastation. We had hoped for a safe and secure commitment. We find ourselves in strange territory in that the judge emphatically determined that Lyra McKee was murdered. And that has been overlooked in the coverage of the case because three people who were charged with murder were not convicted. We also know that the gunman has never been charged with the murder. In the immediate aftermath of the murder, Seru described it as a killing and the new IRA described it as an accident. Mm. And, you know, my own view this morning is that there is a murder victim and there is now an onus on the new IRA and indeed on Seru to come forward and acknowledge that murder and to call for the person responsible for killing Lyra McKee to come forward. And they can't have it both ways. They're celebrating the fact that there is a no guilty verdict by the court, but simultaneously they are still maintain on social media posts that this was some sort of accident. It wasn't. It was a deliberate killing, and the court has determined that.
What's Lyra's family's reaction to this verdict, Seamus, having had to, you know, endure this trial for as long as they did?
The trial lasted over 2 years, and it was prolonged. It was a re-traumatising of the events on the night, and they are therefore devastated. Sarah, who was with her, her partner had to look at the footage, had to listen to the cries of Lyra, but also to hear to see her own scream, see herself screaming, to hear her screams as her partner was killed. This is horrific, and there is no justification for the actions. Also, the court found that no one could be convicted. One person only was convicted in connection with the riot, and the riot was a staged event which led to the shooting. And the judge actually described the shooting at the end as a finale to what was effectively a display of strength. And this isn't the Derry or the Northwest that I know, but yet there is, I think Sarah feels very strongly on that, there is a conspiracy of silence. I would say a conspiracy of silence enforced by fear by a small group of people. And there was at times a menacing and toxic atmosphere around the trial. On Friday, associates of those on trial photographed journalists, filmed journalists, as they entered the building. There was an attempt to intimidate journalists covering the trial, and very little respect was shown to the family of Lyra McKee by people who had the audacity to apologise for what they described as an accident. So, of course, the family are devastated. And I'm not confident that they're can be a further conviction secured without those in positions of power and influence in whom I don't have a great deal of trust. But without their cooperation, I can't see someone coming forward. Father Joe McVeigh in Derry, who was present on the night, has called for people to come forward. It's very difficult to be optimistic, but Lyra herself was famous for her saying that things can only get better. Mm. It won't always be like this. And it's very difficult to try to capture that spirit. But in the face of the most depressing of verdicts, you know, in terms purely of the emotion and the at the end of a very long road, I can see the family trying to see is there any light that can be gained.
It's incredibly difficult for the family, obviously, as they work through their loss of Lyra, but also, you know, not having answers, which is incredibly difficult, and also not knowing if a person they walk past on the street is the person responsible for this.
Well, I think the problem with the verdict is, and I'm being careful here because
you respect the
judgment of the court, but that doesn't stop us from criticising it. The reality is that in each case, first of all, I mean, it was very traumatic, to use the word again, because the judge determined that Lyra McKee had been murdered. And that in itself might seem a statement of the obvious, but there was an attempt to present it as something that was not intentional. So the family would have got relief from that. There was then a brief adjournment, and when she came back, she went through all of the different... Remember, there were 9 people on various charges, only 3 on murder. And in each case, she referred to the likelihood that the individuals concerned were present, the likelihood that they were guilty. But at the end, then, there was that it was circumstantial evidence, and therefore it didn't meet the burden of proof. So that makes it really difficult for the family to accept that the judge is talking about near certainty, and then, but, you know, is saying that there is a burden of truth. There was no jury, of course. Mm-hmm. This is the legacy of the old Diplop court system, which arose in itself because of fear of intimidation by paramilitary groups. And it's difficult to speculate as to whether a jury might have applied a different set of criteria. And for the family and friends and colleagues, there is always the what if. The lines of Billy Bragg came to me as I left the court, where he once, in one of his songs, he says, this ain't justice, it's the law. The law was applied, and the law has been applied, but the notion that this somehow grants justice to anyone is not something that will be accepted.
Yeah, and you talked of, you know, people with direct knowledge maybe having a conscience and coming forward with information. The wall of silence, I think the family were referencing as well, is the fact that, you know, some reports of up to 150 people may have witnessed this event or the events surrounding this shooting, and no one's come forward, or not enough have come forward.
No one has come forward with sufficient evidence to secure a safe conviction, but there was a menacing atmosphere within the city of Derry in the immediate aftermath. One of Lyra's great crusades was to ensure that young men and women of her generation, the post-Good Friday generation, would not be lured down a sectarian path by the older generation with a failed ideology. And ironically, she has become a victim of that ideology. And I think her challenge to us would be to say, what are you doing about it? Derry continues to be the poor relation in the Northwest in terms of Stormont. There is a feeling that young people are still alienated in Derry. And I think that Lyra's commitment to journalism, and she was an amazing journalist, a young journalist, was to try to look under the bonnet to see, well, what's the cause of this? And I'm not confident that you can sort of prick the conscience of the older generation, but there are people there undoubtedly who know what happened, who was responsible, who ordered the killing. And again, I repeat the challenge, having apologised in the first instance and acknowledged a fault, albeit for an accident, CERU, signed itself as a political party, and also then the new IRA, and they of course denied the connections, need to come forward and say, yes, the court now has ruled that there was a murder. If you accept the verdict in the first instance, then you also, there's a logic in dealing with the murder verdict. Mm. But over the weekend, I had to lodge private complaints on X about homophobic slurs and insults to the memory of Lyra McKee from sources that I recognise as being close to some of those involved.
Yeah.
There was a celebratory tone on Facebook and X from some people. Lessons have not been learned, but there is no victory in this for anyone. There is no victory in a verdict which leaves so many questions unanswered.
Very finally, are there any questions to be asked about proceeding with this trial? Because, you know, I'm not saying anyone could have necessarily predicted the outcome, but the evidence was there. It would have to have gone to the DPP or equivalent. And, of course, because of that, we had this trial that lasted in excess of 2 years with this outcome. Are there any questions in that regard from your perspective or the families, for that matter, Seamus?
Well, I don't speak for the family.
No, I know, but just in case you happen to have got wind of what they might have said.
I think it is important to say that. But my own view, I mean, there is a lesser burden of proof on the public prosecution office than there is on the judge. And they were satisfied on the basis of the evidence gathered that there was a case to answer. Listening, the full judgment is not yet available, but when you read it, it's very dense. It is highly technical. But you know, there was very clear evidence to justify the DPP or the Office of Public Prosecution bringing the case in the first instance. Mm-hmm. It would have been a travesty not to do so. And it was the view was, both in terms of the murder, but also in terms of the riot, that this was effectively a communal, not the legal term, but effectively a communal responsibility, a shared responsibility, and that even though you didn't have someone who fired the shot, that there were people who appeared to be those, the people charged, appeared to be on film, appeared to be the ones who were encouraging and helping to direct what took place. The evidence, you know, it was all circumstantial, and we know from many criminal cases that circumstantial evidence can be very dangerous. Therefore, the judges always err on the side of caution. And, of course, it's highly technical analysis, pretty much frame by frame.
Yep.
And that's why it was so difficult for the family to sit through that process. And halfway through the trial, more or less, there was an application to have the entire trial collapsed because of what was a perceived weakness in the identification. And the Lady Chief Justice decided to proceed and to give her judgment at the end.
Mm.
So that, all of that made it extremely difficult for the family, who have shown remarkable resilience and who were there along with Sarah and with people like filmmaker Alison Miller, you know, engaged fully with the process, are still, you know, left to ponder what are their next steps, and I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
We tend to use the phrase justice for Lira the same as we do justice for Martin O'Hagan. We now have two journalists killed in Northern Ireland with no one convicted. But ultimately, justice has already been denied because a young, talented journalist was deprived of the right to grow old and live and love and learn and teach us
and
so
ironically
much
work for the
going to teach us.
Work for the betterment of Derry, which she loved so much. Seamus, thanks for your time.
Yeah, and I mean, my other thought, Greg, okay, was at the end of the week, was she was a member of the LGBT community who had a lot to say about the DUP, and I knew her not very well and wouldn't claim personal friendship, but I did know her and I followed her very work closely, and I thought her voice was missed during the whole Jeffrey Donaldson thing, because she would have had so much to say about the hypocrisy and would have relished the journalistic challenge of following all of that. But we miss her, and we miss her so often, and our thoughts are with her family and friends.
Yeah, for sure, and we join with you in that. Thank you, Seamus. Seamus Dooley there, who's Assistant General Secretary of the National Union of Journalists. As you have been hearing, tributes continue to be paid to young Aaron Friel from Buncrana, who tragically died in a road traffic collision in Inishowen at the weekend. Of course, full Garda investigation is taking place to gather all information that's available, not just for a Garda investigation, of course, but there'll be many people, the family of Aaron and others who will want answers as well. So it's really important that we hear now from Inspector Jonathan Sweeney. Thanks for joining me this morning, Inspector. Unfortunately, it's in these circumstances, but I know there's an appeal that you want to get out to the wider public.
Yes, Greg, and just before I start with the appeal, I would just like to offer my deepest condolences to the family and friends of this fine young man. Thoughts and prayers are with them at this most difficult of times.
So, talk us through the collision, what we know, and in that process, I suppose we can ask anyone who may have any information to come forward, Inspector.
Yes, so Gardaí and Emergency Services attended the scene of what turned out to be a fatal road traffic collision at Kinnegal Cross, Ballymagan, on Saturday the 4th of July. The collision involved two cars and occurred shortly before 9:10 p.m. Gardaí are now appealing to the public for assistance. We're appealing to anyone who may have witnessed the collision to come forward. Road users who may have camera footage, including dash cam, and were travelling near Kinnegal Cross, Ballymagan, outside Buncrana between 8:30 p.m. and 9:15 p.m. on Saturday the 4th of July, are asked to make this footage available to investigating Gardaí. Anyone with information is asked to contact Buncrana Garda Station on 074-932-0540, the Garda Confidential Line on 1800-666-111, or indeed at any local Garda Station.
Now, the road was closed, obviously, has since reopened as well, too, just in case anyone's inquiring about that. And just in relation to how the... we talk about this quite regularly, but just to remind people, if people travelled in that area around those times you mentioned and have the dash cam, the Gardaí can, they will deal with it. They will download it, isolate what's important, etc. It's not up to people necessarily to scrub through the footage. I think it's important in all cases that if you were in and around the area at any of the times that you mentioned, that you just make the SD card or the internal memory available to Gardaí, and it's your teams, Jonathan, that will sift through that and determine what's important and what can be disregarded.
That's correct, right, Greg. We have trained personnel to look through any footage that is made available to us.
Okay, thank you for that. That's Inspector Jonathan Sweeney with Garda Síochána here in North Donegal. Just a reminder, the investigation's being led out of Buncrana Garda Station, that number 932540. They got a confidential line, 1-800-666-111, or any Garda station for that matter. If you have any information, any camera footage, including dash cam footage, and we're travelling near Kinnegal Cross between 8:30 p.m. and 9:15 p.m., I beg your pardon, just on Saturday past July 4th, you're asked to make that footage, as we just mentioned there, available to Gardaí. Now, some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Jeffrey Donaldson is to appeal his guilty verdict. Why are we allowed this man a second day in court? Has he not put his victims through enough? Well, it's part of the legal process, and people are entitled to appeal the case. And I think if any of us were in that situation, even as horrendous as what he's convicted for was, he's entitled to appeal that. Greg, when is Inishowen's water issues going to be sorted? It's summer, the kids are off, and it's a real pain having no water. It's impossible to plan anything because you don't know when it'll be back on or off. Yeah, there's a lot of outages across the county. Inishowen particularly seems to have some of the poorer water network. Any information we can get, we can bring it to you, but it's clear that there are significant infrastructural issues there. I heard from Councillor Jack Murray, and it's really important too that the more people, if you're affected by it, the more people that complain, it bumps it up, right? So there's no point 200 people signing a petition because that's one contact with Irish Water, Uisce Éireann. If you are affected by this, go to the website, get the email address, whichever way you prefer to do it, and log a complaint or log the outage, and it will get more scrutiny that way. Greg, who was commenting on the Women's GE on Saturday for Highland Radio? It was brilliant. Could have listened to him all day. Some crack that comes in from Noel. I didn't hear that on Saturday, Caroline. Who was commenting? We'll find that out, because credit where credit is due. Right. Now, unfortunately, people do silly things for no reason whatsoever. I'm going to talk about one of those now because the very popular Bala Buffet and Stranraer Golf Club, well, damage has been caused to their 14th green. Barry McMenamin is of the Bala Buffet and Stranraer Golf Club. Thanks for joining us, Barry. Wanton act of violence here or vandalism. What happened?
Thank you, Greg, for having me on. Sometime between Saturday or Sunday morning and Saturday evening, our green on the 14th was damaged. I'm not sure where or who, but there's two divots taken out of the green, which can be repaired. But it's disheartening that people would have as little no respect to the greenkeepers, but in such an effort to try to maintain the course and get it to the highest standard as possible for the community to enjoy, and for somebody to come out and damage the thing is very disappointing, and would appeal to all people to respect the property, and indeed any property, and be mindful of the other people that are out and trying to enjoy. So it's bringing needless work on our hard-worked staff to try to repair something that shouldn't have been done in the first place.
Judging by the damage, how do you think it was done, Barry?
It would appear that it has been done with a club, so it's a golfer, because a green is quite a hard surface, so it's not simple to do this. So it would appear that somebody went up with a golf club and just out of anger or ignorance has hit a ball or attempted to hit a ball or just dug two holes.
And do you think someone came onto the course, or do you believe maybe it's someone who had played green fees or was a member?
It's hard to know. There is access onto the course at the 14th green, right, through St. Joseph's, but certainly it would appear that it was a golfer, because it would look like it would have taken a club to do this sort of damage.
Crazy.
So I suspect it was somebody that was playing in the course, and either out of ignorance or just out of anger that
or both
vandalized yeah. the green.
Okay, well, listen, you've got great ground staff there, and I'm sure you've got some nice turf hidden away somewhere to patch that up, and people playing won't know the difference by the time the team are finished with it. But still, it's certainly not in line with etiquette.
Not at all.
All right, thanks for that.
But we just appeal to people to be mindful of the others, and it's not a individually owned, it's a club owned. So there are a lot of people involved, and an awful lot of people put in an awful lot of hard work, and it's just very disheartening for them. But anyway, up onwards and upwards, as the saying goes, we just have to repair and move on. But just for people to be mindful, if they're playing or if they're visiting, just that this is not a minor incident. We'd like them to have respect.
Okay, how's the course playing at the moment? We're heading now into a nice spell of dry
weather. Thankfully, good.
How are you playing it, though? How are you playing it?
Oh, I'm playing very mixed.
A mixed bag.
It goes from reasonable to half middling, I would say, is about as best as gets.
Okay. All right. You know Padraig Harrington, then?
I do indeed.
All right. You'll know Padraig Harrington, but yes, he did.
No. That's unfortunately
his,
not. No.
I think that's his third senior US Open win, I think, which is a very small club, something else.
That is indeed. Yep. He's an amazingly long and successful career. It's good to see.
Yeah, I'd say he's a nightmare just with how he thinks so much about everything, or he would be a dream, I'm not sure. But anyway, listen, Barry, look after yourself. Thanks for that. And as I say, that course will be back and repaired in no time whatsoever. Good morning, Greg. We have a new road. The N56 out of Glent is going towards Dunloe, which cost millions of euro, which is very dangerous now because serious dips formed. It's a serious collision waiting to happen here. The Townland of Letter would appreciate if you could mention this on your programme. Many thanks from a concerned listener. Tell us more about that. You wouldn't want to see that, would you? Can you mention well done to Buncrana Children's Charity giving €28,225 to families in Inishowen for the first 6 months of this year? Please continue to support that cause. Greg, have we been watching football the wrong way for years? If you believe the adverts during the World Cup, everyone just sits around eating a certain well-known bag of crisps or its American version. Was that, is it Walker's? I have seen the ads, but I don't watch adverts or analysis, you see. This caller says, I don't think it will catch on, though. I can't imagine ever seeing the headlines that Irish or Scottish fans have ate some big city completely out of crisps. No, we might not eat them out of crisps. We might drink them out of something else. England team through to play Sweden now. It is Sweden. I always get Sweden and Norway mixed up. It is Sweden. Halland scored twice to beat Brazil and England through the course of the night. The pubs were open until 5 o'clock in England for that game. Can you believe it? Can you imagine? So they're going to be very happy. And some of the headlines now, well, they're the best team ever and it's inevitable that they'll go on to win the World Cup. But I think they could be disappointed against Halland and his team. But still, they're still in it. We're joined on the programme now by Brendan Devenny, who is, of course, the presenter of the GEA podcast, The DL Debate. Hi, Brendan. How are you keeping?
Good, sir. What about yourself?
You're looking well.
Thank you very much. Same very as.
Indeed. Well done to
back at ya.
Yeah, well done to the Downings ladies. They had an early start Sunday and were promoted to Division 1. So Seamus and his co-manager doing the business. So it's good to see a bit of success there. And there is a focus on ladies football tonight as well, Brendan.
Yeah, 100%. It was a big weekend. Obviously Donegal retaining their senior status with a relegation playoff game against Waterford, which they went into as a huge underdogs with brilliant James Daly's side. They're pulling it together and as I say, huge game. Big victory at the end of the season for them. And we have Katie Hearn, Maureen O'Donnell, Nadine Doherty all coming on. Three ladies who know a thing or two about it to talk about the game and as well look forward to under-20s. Ladies are in All-Ireland final next weekend. Their manager, Desi McNamara, joint manager, is coming on to join us as well. So big focus on ladies football this evening.
See that win for the Donegal ladies there, a big game. How important is a single game like that? It's sort of in a process, you know, as you continue to build and seek honours. It's sort of towards the end of the season, but it does deliver momentum. It is significant beyond surviving in the division, I presume.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it's the top flight, it's the senior championship, and, you know, there's been so much made of, you know, Donegal in that semi kind of transition stage, you know, but I'm sure James Daly doesn't want to hear that. He has his team together now and he's making, building it, but while you're doing it, you're coming up against some of the top sides in the country. So while you're finding your way into the team that you are, you're playing against some top quality teams that are there really aiming at winning the championship. So it's, I suppose it's just getting that bit of foundation and making yourself competitive. But as I say, that'll give this current squad such belief, because Waterford have taken a huge couple of big scalps themselves this season. So that was a massive victory for them. As I say, they went down as huge underdogs. They had to battle their way right through it. And, yeah, you know, absolute kudos to them. James Daly's reaction after it, it was one of those heartwarming ends of the season championship victories that, as I say, will do a lot for them heading into next year.
Yeah, with the annual vintage show that we had been covering over the last number of years, the one thing that was very clear was there was, I mean, we know it right, but incredible strong connections between this part of the world and London in business, but also in sport. And you're going to be teasing out those sports connections, aren't you, on the show this evening as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, such an interesting story, I think, for Donegal people. And, of course, we did the diaspora thing over in Philadelphia there. You know, we are a county where we have made such a mark around the world in terms of where we've went and what we've done. And the GAA has been to the backbone of that. You know, where we've went, obviously the GAA has followed, and so many of our teams, you know, for years, like Donegal New York's and Donegal Boston's, you know, you had your teams in Dubai, obviously heading out to Australia now, Donegal people to the four of them, and of course, you know, like the Conal Gaels for years, but now in London there's a new team, you know, emerging, and different teams are emerging there as well. So, you know, Michael Boyle, of course, a famous coach from Donegal here, an ex Donegal keeper, his role in playing in London, and of course at club level as well, what he's done there, and Stephen Collins as well is in the background team of those as well. So there's a lot of stuff happening there and a lot of Donegal connections and players in there. And it's interesting just to get their story, Greg. I know you mentioned we might go over at some stage as well, possibly.
Brilliant stuff. Looking forward to that. It sounds like a great show, as always. And it's live for you to listen to just after the 7 o'clock news. But also, it's available straight away afterwards as a podcast to listen whenever you want. Go ahead, Brendan.
Yeah, just North London Shamrocks. I have to give him a shout-out as well. Because, you know, Peter Waller, they're going for 3 in a row London Championships. And the other man, he's from down Dunfanaghy there as well. So, yeah, the amount of tie-ins right across the board are huge. And the lads have been involved in this North London Shamrock team that's coming up and up as well. So, yeah, great story in there for the boys.
Lovely stuff. Thanks, Brendan. Look after yourself. Brendan Devaney there. DL Debate just after 7 p.m. this evening. Hi, Greg, from the members of Carrigart Presbyterian Church. A big thank you for publicising the fundraising coffee morning we held on Saturday. It was a great success with the whole community coming out to support the event. Today, we've raised over €4,500, and this money will help our minister with all the expenses that he and his family are experiencing at present with his son on life support in hospital in England. Many thanks to everyone who helped and supported the event, and well done to you all. And just to reiterate that we are thinking on the minister and his family at this incredibly difficult time, but I'll tell you, the community comes out when it's called on and comes out in force. And I had every intention of getting up to that on Saturday, but between the jigs and the reels, it was undoable. Yeah, it's Norway, of course. I don't know why I have this blockage between Norway and Sweden. It's just a constant thing, mixing the two up. England play Norway next. Let's support the event. Who are you going to be supporting? That is the big question. I mean, you would believe by the coverage now at this point that you might as well just etch England onto the World Cup because no one's going to beat them. Well, no, we're not tonight. In Spain, Portugal, that's going to be an interesting game tonight. And there are others too. Did you hear about the President Trump getting the United States player red card deferred, the suspension deferred for a year? You know, FIFA has been trying to clean up its act in terms of looking like a corrupt organisation, but that's not going to help. Wendy, good morning to you. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Right. Now, you believe there should be a badge for parent and child parking. I think it's the most abused of all parking. Not that it's like there's a hierarchy, but I think it's just seen as a guidance rather than something strictly enforced, Wendy.
Yeah, just from my own experience, just in many places that we go to, all of the child spaces are taken up, one, because there's not enough, and two, because people just think that they can park there for convenience, whether that be some obviously disabled car parking, or even those who just think they have nice cars so they don't want to get them dinged. Mm. So they want the bigger space, which then leaves us in a predicament of trying to get our two-year-old out of a car or trying to manage groceries and things like that. And the spaces just aren't big enough to get a baby in and out of a car seat.
They can't, because you have to open...
Had to pull her free into the front seat.
Exactly. You have to open the door fully, because you have to open it out, get in, your bum sticking out as you're trying to unlock the belts and all that kind of stuff. So you do require wider than a regular space has at the moment. And you don't want to be banging off somebody else's car or damage your own car either.
No, 110%. That's the one thing that we try and avoid. And even trying to find a car parking space, you know, that's maybe open on one side is then another thing that you're having to do, or you have to park, you know, a mile across the other side of a car park to try and get a space that allows you to have that extra space beside you. So it is, it's just becoming more and more of a kind of off-putting even going to certain places because, you know, the parking isn't available, or it's just, oh, look, somebody take care of the little one, because obviously it's just a whole who you have trying to get a car parking space. So it's sometimes it's handier just not to have her with you, and that's not always an option. So yeah, it's becoming a real issue at the minute, even whenever I see people parked in the spaces and they have no child seats in the cars at all. And I'm like, sorry, do you mind? I've got my little one with me. And they just look at you really cheekily.
And of course,
park the car and get up and walk away.
Yeah, you're faced with challenging someone and you just want to go shopping. You don't want to have an argy bargy. Not, and I mean, I don't mean an argy bargy. Just, exactly. Now, just finally and briefly, the problem is a lot of these are in private car parks, and I think people don't really think there's a level of enforcement here. Is it up to these predominantly, I think, supermarkets we're talking about to try and enforce this a little better?
I think so. I know, like, of a couple of places in and around kind of Derry and Letterkenny where we would go mostly shopping, that they do have people that supervise the car parks. Like, even there's a couple of car parks that if you park for more than 2 hours, you get a fine.
Mm.
So I'm like, well, if you're able to manage that, I'm pretty sure that you're able to put something in place that ensures that paying customers that are coming in with their children are able to come and have that. It's nearly a day out sometimes going to do the groceries.
Isn't it so sad?
I agree. I
agree with you. I look forward. I look forward to going shopping. Oh my word! Okay,
it's but it is.
I know. Listen, it's. I think a lot of people will agree with you. We'll throw it out to the wider listeners. For now, happy shopping. Hopefully, you can get a decent parking space because it is blooming stressful enough. Even though we do try and get some enjoyment out of it, but thanks, Wendy, and best wishes to all.
All right, thanks so much.
Bye. Have a good day. Are you familiar with no wait cards? Honestly, I'm going to be learning quite a bit, I think, in my conversation now with Maria Crow, founder of No Wait Card Ireland. Thanks for joining me, Maria.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
We're doing good. Right, so talk to me about no wait cards and what they are.
Basically, a no-wait card is a card. I have my Crohn's and colitis one here. I have a bladder condition, mm-hmm. but we don't actually have one for bladder conditions, so I use the Crohn's and colitis. It's just basically a little card, and it says this person has an urgent medical need to use a toilet. And what we have the cards for is, as I said, like people with bladder and bowel conditions, like need to urgently use toilets when they're out and about. And that's the basis of the card.
So if you get one of these and one can understand exactly why you might, how much awareness is there in sort of shops and public spaces or festivals or what have you about what this card means and why the user might have it?
Obviously not much awareness, Greg. That's why I started the campaign, No Wait Card Ireland. No cards have any kind of legislation behind them. So the cards, like some people do recognise what they are, some people don't. And since kind of COVID, a lot of retailers have closed their customer toilets. So it's become kind of more and more of an issue over the last few years as to how many people actually let you use a bathroom when you're out and about. So I started the campaign basically because I started to not be able to go anywhere really. If I go somewhere, I have to kind of map where toilets are. And, you know, it's a kind of 50-50 as to whether they'll let you use their toilet even with the card, even if you explain. So that's kind of the situation we're in at the moment, is some people will, some people won't. But when you have a bladder or bowel condition, it can't be like maybe they will, maybe they won't. Mm. You just can't do that.
Do you often hear, oh, the toilets are for staff only, we don't have insurance to cover customers using them? And is that just, is that an excuse, or is that legitimate, and is that something that needs to be looked at?
Yes, they do sometimes say about the insurance, and that's why my local TD there, Mark Wall, he introduced a bill for us, like we're both together on the No Wait Card campaign, into the Dáil in January, and it's basically... it's a small bit of legislation, and it's basically just around, you know, like how many people have to work in a shop and kind of less insurance impact. So that's kind of sitting in the Dáil since January. It's waiting to go to second stage.
Mm. This is something we've covered extensively, not the no wait card per se, Maria, but the mm-hmm. lack of facilities in the likes of Letterkenny. Now, thankfully, in one of the more busy parts of the biggest town in this region, there are now toilets that are there. But up until then, people were relying on the goodwill of shops. And, you know, we've heard countless stories of you know, pregnant women or people with some of the conditions you mentioned, like in an absolute panic. And one can only imagine. Well, I think everyone's been caught short, right? And knows that panic. It's the fact that it's a part of everyday life, really. So we can, I think I can remember times thinking, what am I going to do? This is a dire situation. So I do understand what it's like in that moment, but I don't necessarily understand what it's like that consistently or regularly.
Yes, and quite regularly, because I have a painful bladder syndrome. And like, if I'm in a flare up, I have to like go to the bathroom every 30 minutes. So being caught out and like going into shops and explaining to strangers when I don't really have time, because like my condition is called painful bladder for a reason. It's quite painful if I don't go to the bathroom. And because I set off the campaign, a lot of people with Crohn's contacted me as well. Like, and they'll have an accident. And you can imagine that's all right, maybe one time. But then the next time you try and go somewhere, you'll be thinking, what happens if I can't get to the bathroom? I'll be in pain or I'll have an accident. And like your world starts to kind of shrink every time you go out, if you know what I mean?
So I know part of this campaign is gathering stories of people's experience.
Yeah.
But there's probably going to be a huge cohort of people that simply don't leave the house or do so on very rare occasions, you know, and their voices, I think, are important too, that maybe they've had one or two or three accidents or have been refused and had an embarrassing situation. And their choice is to stay at home. As you say, the world can shrink very quickly.
Yeah, that's why I started the campaign, because that's what happened to me. I had been refused twice, and I've had to, I know it's terrible, but like I've had to pee in car parks. I've had to pee behind bushes, at the back of shops, you know what I mean? Which is embarrassing, you know, yourself, or like a person, a woman in her 50s, wandering around behind her car doors. And I know loads of people, like, it's the same with like Crohn's and all, just said the same. They've been caught out short. And now, like, we're all, that's what I'm saying. Like, if I have to go somewhere, like when I was going to the Aviva there a couple of weeks ago, I am in a flare up and I was trying to map toilets, you know, every maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah.
The whole way up. And as well as that, some garages might say they have a toilet, and then when you get there, they're out of order, or they're like closed, something's wrong with it.
You have to get a key and you're fifth in the queue and you're standing there, you know, mad to use the toilet. And there's so many variables. So what do you hope to achieve now with Thursday, the 9th of July, in terms of awareness? I know you're looking to gather stories, but what do you think really needs to come out of these awareness days, Maria?
All right. Well, this is our very first awareness day, Greg. I kind of reached out to the Irish Cancer Society has an 08 card. Crohn's and colitis have an 08 card. Spinal injuries all have an 08 card. And like, I don't think there's enough awareness around us. So I reached out to them and they were absolutely delighted to come on board. So this is our very, very first awareness day. And basically what we're asking people to do is like use the hashtag No Weight Card Ireland, because that's part of the campaign to introduce a nationwide card. And I'm just asking like stories of, you know, like having to stay at home, toilet refusals, or even just a simple like I support a No Weight Card using the hashtag. On Thursday, this coming Thursday, like would help immensely, because I think if more businesses knew that this card is like our only freedom, you know, without cards or without, you know, introduction of cards, we're not going to be able, like there's thousands of people who are stuck at home. We can't go anywhere. We have to cancel events. We can't go to like parades or anything like that, because there's no toilet. So that's what the card means to us. I think if people knew when, you know, we showed the card and unfortunately have to explain medical conditions to strangers in shops, they'd be a bit like, yeah, I know what that means. Yeah, yeah. You use the toilet.
I think businesses can take the lead on this, and I think it actually could be really quite advantageous for them, because, you know, these cards are not dished out willy-nilly. How often they would be used, no, I don't know. But if you had a sign up saying no wait cards welcome here, also people that don't need those cards would think, you know, actually this is a business that really cares about its community as well. So there's a lot of positives, I think, for businesses and other places with public toilets to sort of buy into this, you know, and be proactive rather than maybe have someone challenging them in a moment.
Yeah, I think a lot of the issue is, you know what I mean, they could have like, you know, the larger retailers, they could have a lot of staff. And I would like them just, you know, to train their staff. You know, this is a card and this is why it means, like a couple of businesses have reached out and they said they're happy to do that. But like overall, And I know it's like through my campaign and through people messaging me, you know what I mean? It seems to be the same businesses all the time. Like, and I have gone in and spoken to some of the business that are regular kind of offenders, you know, like maybe they get one person every 2 weeks with a card and explaining it. And it's a bit like that, or their staff only. And I think there's a lack of understanding exactly, you know what I mean, what that card means to that person.
Okay. And of course, you know, staff training, seasonal workers coming in, you know, if you're interested in it, the obvious thing is to make sure everyone knows what's what. If anyone wants more information or indeed to submit their own personal stories, Maria, is it a Facebook page, a website? Where are you directing people?
Yes, my page is called No Waste Card Ireland, so there. But I'm just asking people, like, across their own social media, like, just share a story, share support, use that hashtag No Waste Card Ireland. And if they could pin it, you know, even to their own page on Thursday, and like, they can share it to my page, they can share it to, I have an Instagram page as well. And I'm going to be sharing everyone's posts all day long on Thursday, just to raise as much awareness as we possibly can on Thursday.
And remove any stigma that might be there. Okay, Maria, thank you for your time. Maria Crowe, founder of No Weight Card Ireland. Maybe you've got experience of that and you wish to share. 086 60 25,000. Right, we solved the mystery. The man who entertained so many with his reporting of the Lilies GEA game on Saturday was Willie Hegarty. This caller says he was amazing, his wit was just the best. Yeah, indeed, he proved incredibly popular. And I was chatting there to Oisin, and Willie is a frequent contributor to Highland from down the country there. It's a pity Mr. Dooley isn't as viciously critical of his members, this is of the NUJ, of his members who stand behind and defend the Israeli regime and the slaughter of 20,000 children, and so many journalists who refuse to describe Israel's attacks on Gaza as genocide. I understand where you're coming from too, but I also, we were talking about, and we invited him on to discuss the loss of Lyra McKee and the collapse of that trial. Now, the last time I spoke to our next guest, Patricia McBride, the director of On Green on Theatre in Letterkenny, it was ahead of significant renovations and expansion of the existing facilities. Welcome back to the show, Patricia. Where are we now in terms of that work?
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me back to talk about it. Yeah, when we spoke before, we were closing the theatre for a 6-week period in December to carry out the works. So we reopened on schedule towards the end of January. But the studio space wasn't quite finished. So it's finished now. I think anybody who's been in the theatre will see the renovations are very obvious. We have new flooring throughout. There's a new accessible box office counter, and we have this lovely new studio space now, which is a refurbishment of the upper foyer, where we had like voids in the floor before. They've all been filled in. It's the space is closed in, and we have this small studio space. I was kind of trying to get the dimensions and things this morning in case you would ask me. So it's like 11.5 metres by about 6.5 metres.
Wow, that's big.
So it's a perfect rehearsal room. It'll be used for our youth theatre classes and for artists who want to develop work. It's got a sprung floor, so we can have dance artists in there. It's just a great facility now, a real asset to the theatre.
Sure. And listen, in the original designs, you know, you can see the logic of the upper foyer and it looked beautiful and all the glass and all that type of stuff. But this is now, in 26, a far better use of that space.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the design feature before where the voids were there gave you the opportunity to look down into the lower foyer, and that was great. But it was a very underused space. And as anyone involved in the arts here in Donegal knows, there's always a shortage of spaces. Local groups are always looking for places to rehearse. And we have a beautiful auditorium in the theatre, but we didn't have a smaller space. We basically had a meeting room. So this is perfect now for very small scale works like readings of new plays, things that we would have done previously on the stage, where we brought the audience onto the stage, closed the curtains.
So performances as well as...
Yeah.
And sometimes artists' work is designed for that more intimate sort of environment.
That's
and it's
right.
a better space for that, isn't it?
Well, usually new work or a work in progress where a writer might want to kind of get some feedback from the audience before doing the next draft of a play, that kind of thing. And these are, you know, these are programmes of work and arts development work that we've been doing for some time, but haven't had a proper dedicated space to do them in.
Great.
So it's great for that.
Now, to celebrate the launch, which is on Monday, the 13th of July at 1:45, am I correct in saying that a piece of work has been commissioned by a local artist for the event?
Yes, that's right. We've commissioned an artist called Laura Sheeran to write a piece of music, and that's under the Percent for Arts scheme. So it was my colleague Nicola's idea, actually, that rather than, you know, commissioning something solid, like a, you know, an artwork or like a statue or a sculpture or whatever, which would be the kind of norm, because this new space will also be a performance space, we have commissioned a piece of music that will be kind of the music in the front of house that audiences listen to as they go in. And it's based on the idea of 1% of the cost of the building works is the Percent for Arts scheme. So this is based on 1% of your day, which is about 15 minutes. So that's it. And Laura will be performing that for the first time on Monday the 13th.
Fantastic. Now, the studio in and of itself, like, its use is almost background, if you know what I mean, in that, you know, the local groups and organisations will find out about it. The artists that may perform there, you know, through their engagements with On Green On. So it's already going to be this active, well-used space.
It's in use already.
Yeah.
We have 15 kids in there this morning doing a drama summer camp. So,
which is fantastic, because
you know,
they can say it's at On Green On Theatre as
yes,
well, too.
Yes.
And it builds those relationships into the future. Who's to say that some of those young people won't end up, you know, pressing the boards into the future of the main stage?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a lot of our kids come through the youth theatre and on into careers in the professional arts, whether it's stage management or directing or acting, music. So a lot have come through and are making their careers professionally.
Brilliant. All very exciting.
Yes,
anything else you want to mention or anything upcoming? Or
well, yes, just to say that we're, you know, we're launching into a really busy summer programme now through July. And, you know, we're partners with the Errigal Arts Festival. So over the next 2 weeks, we have a really busy programme. We've got a beautiful show called Distillation, which is it's an unusual show in that it's kind of a theatre show, but it's more of an experience. And it's a celebration of the Irish landscape, and particularly celebrates the bog. And every member of the audience gets a little vial of perfume that's been specially curated
right.
from bog flowers. It's absolutely amazing. Something very special. Inishowen Traditional Choir are doing their Sounding the Peninsula concert. We have lots of really great stuff coming up. Really nice drama program with work that we've actually commissioned and helped develop. So there's a play called Rattling at the end of July, and then in September we're doing a play called Hello Charlie. So we're always busy. There's
on
always
the go.
Stuff going
yeah.
on.
And it's not just July or August. You're looking through July or August 27 and on. And
absolutely.
It's a constant grind. No, I was going to say grind.
Yes.
Because that makes it sound like it's...
It's not a grind.
No,
thank
it's
goodness.
Not. But it's a constant piece of work.
It is. I think when you've
curating
got...
Curating the what's upcoming.
Yes, when you have a venue, you're always thinking about the next thing. And I mean, we do tend to program 6 to 9 months in advance. So really, the programme is booked up to kind of the end of April next year.
Happy days. So, okay, brilliant. Best place to go and check out is the website on Green On Theatre. The box office is there and what have you. And quite literally, you know, in terms of the new studio, watch this space.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a community space as well. So anybody wants to come in and have a look, they're very welcome.
Brilliant. Okay, good luck with the official launch. Monday the 13th of July at 1:45. And is that open to the public generally? I mean, it's...
Yeah, the public are welcome to come in. So we have
1%.
Yeah, here they're 1% of your day to have lovely like piece of music and relax.
And you were going to say Minister
McConnell is doing our official launch.
Brilliant
yes.
stuff. Okay. Well, listen. Best luck. Look forward to hearing what's in store, not just for the big stage, but the studio as well. Is there a name on it? Is it just the studio?
We're just calling it the studio.
I think so.
For now,
it's descriptive. It does
yes,
the job. Yes,
absolutely.
Okay. Thanks so much, Patricia.
Thanks
for
so much, Greg. That was lovely. Cheers.
All right. Patricia Thank McBride, director of Ongreanon Theatre. I'm joined in studio now by Louise Flanagan, author and co-founder of Letterkenny Babies. Good morning to you.
Hello, how are you?
How are you getting on?
Not too bad, thank you.
What's the story? How did Letterkenny Babies become such a big thing?
Oh, well, I don't really know how Letterkenny Babies became such a big thing. Probably one of the reasons why is because it was accidental, I think.
Right, okay.
Sometimes if you try and push something too hard, it falls on its face. But the growth of the page was very organic and... yeah, I basically set it up about 12 years ago when my first child was a baby. Mm. And it has grown quite slowly but steadily ever since.
Yeah,
and now we have over 40,000 followers.
Wow, and they're active as
well,
too. Oh, yes,
very active.
Yeah. No, because you can have a million followers, but if two of them are, that's, you know, so that's fantastic.
Yeah,
and
it's a busy
page. I think it seems to be a great source for... community support too if you've recently moved to the area or you can feel quite lonely even in within a group of people. It's great to have that there.
For sure.
That's not why we're speaking to you though, because you recently had an experience with the EU cross-border healthcare directive. So how did you come to sort of even have this on your radar that it's something that you might employ? It's obviously through a health matter.
Yes, well, that's it. I suppose much like the Letterkenny Babies page, it was accidental. I stumbled upon it. Basically, in January, I realised that I had a hernia that needed repaired. And it was, you know, quite a minor surgery, but at the same time, it was something that did need to be looked about. My GP advised me that I would need to take it very handy. I couldn't do any form of exercise or any lifting or anything until it was repaired. So, of course, I was put on the waiting list for surgery here in Ireland, and I was advised that that waiting list was likely to be at least 18 months long.
Wow.
And that just wasn't going to be able to work for me in terms of just living my normal
life. Yeah, nursing a hernia, effectively, for 18 months minimum.
Yes.
Because you could have got to 18 months and then...
For sure, yeah. So the other option that was put to me by my GP was to consider going private in Northern Ireland. And I wondered how much this would possibly cost. So I was trying to research to figure out how much it would cost if I was to go private to get it repaired in the north. And in my efforts to find the answers to those questions, I actually stumbled upon a third option, which is this EU initiative.
Did we ever get the price for the north, or did we change tact?
Do you know what? It's part of the process that really frustrated me was I couldn't even get to the bottom of it.
Wow,
I contacted the hospitals a few times in the north and I got told prices that ranged in difference by £3,000. And then I was told as well that I could get a partial refund from the HSE. And again, I tried to figure out, well, how much is that refund? And they were saying up to £5,000 if your case is successful.
And you have to front load that as well too. So you are... potentially digging into your own reserves or borrowing, and you don't know what the actual outcome of that's going to be.
Exactly. And so I was trying like everything I possibly could to get the answers to those questions myself. And in my efforts to find those answers, I came across Healthcare Abroad, which is linked to the EU Cross-Border Initiative.
Mm.
And this is a directive that was launched by the EU in 2014, as far as I'm aware. And I assume that before Brexit, people could go to Northern Ireland and avail of this same system when Britain was still part of the EU. But that all, of course, changed with Brexit. You can still get treatment fully paid for in Northern Ireland under the National Treatment Purchase Fund, but that's something different.
Yeah.
I think, and that is dependent on you being on a waiting list by the HSE and then them referring you for surgery.
I think it's changed a little bit now. I don't think you have to be on, there used to be a time you had to be on a waiting list for a certain amount of time, but I do know people that, but it depends on the condition what you can recoup. And
totally.
The one thing we get an awful lot here is that, you know, people are going into service stations to get receipts, and I know they're trying to work on all of that, but it can feel like a gamble.
Totally.
And even your experience with looking at NI, what you might get back felt a little bit like a gamble. Right,
sure.
So There's no waiting lists for this scheme that you went through. So once you got the leaflet or the knowledge, how clear was the information and what were you learning from the get-go?
Well, when I found out about healthcare abroad, I went onto their website and I started reading all of these testimonies from people who had used their services. And to be honest, it seemed to me almost too good to be true. Everyone who had engaged with this company was raving about it, saying that it had changed their lives and it was the best thing they ever discovered and blah, blah, blah. And just typically Irish, I suppose, I just felt very sceptical. I was like, there's bound to be small print. There has to be a catch. If something is too good to be true, then it genuinely is. So I was very, very sceptical myself. And I asked around, you know, if anyone had heard of this healthcare abroad company before, and nobody really seemed to, and that made me all the more wary of it. But I basically decided that I would take a leap of faith, because my other options, festering the waiting list or paying thousands of pounds, weren't particularly appealing to me. So I did as much research as I could, and my experience with the company was just absolutely fantastic, and that's why I'm here today. I feel I owe them a great debt of gratitude for the service they provided to me, so I'm perfectly happy to tell people about
it. Is it kind of end-to-end? So once you contact them, I presume they go, we've done this a lot of times.
Yeah.
This is what happens next.
Totally.
Because that's what would put me off. It's like getting involved in something that I was trying to track.
No, they know exactly what to do. And they are the most efficient company that I have ever encountered in any aspect of my life. They work mainly as well through WhatsApp, which suits me down to the ground. There's none of these, you know, forms to upload or emails to send or information, you know, whatever. It's all very, very easy.
Yeah. And we'll get to the critical part of this, which is that it's 100% fully reimbursed by the HSC. That's the critical part, I think, for a lot of people listening. So when you have that first contact, like, do they give you a list of things that you have to do? Do they engage with your GP or your consultant? Or what happens next? And how soon do you get an appointment?
So they obviously ask you who your GP is, and then they'll reach out to them on your behalf. You don't need to be on any waiting lists. You certainly don't need to have a medical card or private health insurance to avail of this. Basically, anybody who is registered to a GP in Ireland is entitled to avail of this service if they need surgery. So they'll basically contact your GP, and it's, as I say, you don't need to be on a waiting list. They just need the GP's approval, basically, to kind of, you know, put you forward for this surgery. And they offer like a whole range of surgeries as well. Like they do knee and hip replacements, the hernia repair, obviously, varicose veins, sports injuries, weight loss surgery, all sorts of things are all covered. So they'll ask your GP, basically, you know, what it is that this person needs done. And then the GP will then transfer across any medical files or whatever.
How
as well.
Soon then after your first contact were you offered an appointment?
Well, it all came about so quickly. So I said it was in January I discovered that I had a hernia. So I was obviously a couple of weeks kind of getting scans and stuff here to get the confirmation of that. And then I contacted Healthcare Abroad the Friday before St. Bridget's Day. Quite late in the evening, and then of course we were into our bank holiday weekend, and on Wednesday the 3rd they contacted me and they said, you know, how soon can you come out? And I said, as soon as possible. I need this repaired as soon as I can. I need to move on with my life. And they said, well, can you come out on Sunday?
So the greatest challenge so far is actually booking flights.
We're
all familiar with that, right?
Yeah. Well, the great thing about that is you can chase the cheap flights yourself. You can book to fly out of any airport in Ireland. You do have to pay for your flights yourself, but I got flights that were about €60 each way from Dublin to Alicante.
So in terms of getting out there, your accommodation, your food and stuff, that is on you.
Yes, you do need to pay for...
How much did that cost you about?
I was out there for 8 days in total. And all in, it cost me less than €1,000. And that was for my flights, my accommodation and all of my food.
So that could be less or more depending on the person's stay and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. But it was well worth it because my memory of the experience is not that it was like a medical procedure. It was essentially a holiday and it was just a first-class experience in terms of what healthcare and recovery should be.
Do they source the accommodation or do
you? Oh, they do, yeah. Oh, okay. No, they look after the accommodation. I stayed in a really, really lovely four-star hotel with a spa. And it's the hotel that they basically have a working relationship with. So all of the other patients who are attending the same private hospital are staying there too. And there's this lovely sense of camaraderie, you know, where you'd be kind of, you'd see people, you know, on their crutches or whatever, and you'd be asking them, you know, what are you here for, or, you know, whatever. And people kind of share their old war stories and help each other out and offer a lot of, you know, moral support and everything to the other people who are over there.
So a couple of things that people might instantly be concerned about: the language barrier, because, you know, that's even a concern for some people in this country, just by the nature of the fact that there's lots of people working in the health service that come from different places, and it is just the way it is. How is communicating with staff over there?
Absolutely perfect. Like, the vast majority of workers who work for the Healthcare Abroad network are Irish, or certainly English speaking, fluent English speakers. And the staff in the hospital over there were largely Spanish, but they are used to dealing with, you know, Irish patients. They literally, the private hospital over in Denia, they refer to it affectionately as the Irish hospital, because there are so many Irish patients over there. So all of the doctors were Spanish, but they all spoke fluent English.
One other thing that would put me off is the paperwork. So I talked a little earlier on about sometimes with the cross-border scheme, you know, they're looking for receipts from that you bought a coffee somewhere, and a lot of people try and gather all that information, and then hopefully it's approved by the HSE and hopefully they get refunded. Do you have to deal with much of the admin as a patient through this system?
No, not at all. So basically, just in relation to the admin that you do have to do, you have to pay for the surgery up front. But you know that it is going to be fully reimbursed, which is a big difference in terms of, you know, potentially trying to figure out how to get a partial refund from the Northern Irish system. You know that you're going to get a full refund. They liaise with the credit unions so that if you don't have the money lying about, which is kind of unlikely, especially when surgery comes upon you unexpectedly, you can get a loan from the credit union.
So they give assurances?
And they do, they act as a guarantor. They contact the credit union as basically. So you're pretty much, unless you're an absolute scoundrel, you're pretty much guaranteed to get that loan approved by the credit union, because they'll act as guarantor for you. And then in my case, the credit union transferred the money directly to the hospital in Spain. So I didn't need to deal with that at all. And then the paperwork was, in my opinion, quite minimal for the loan, because it was, you know, it was guaranteed. So I did need to, you know, go down and sign a bit of paperwork in the credit union, but it was very straightforward.
But again, that stuff we do often do, or many of us do, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So it's the extra stuff that we wouldn't be familiar with that they seem to pretty much
and
deal with.
They deal with all of that. So that was the only paperwork that I did have to fill in. In terms of filling in the paperwork for the refund from the HSE, that is all covered. And that is all done for you by the people who work.
Did it take long for the HSE to process the reimbursement?
Yes, it does, in fairness. Like, I think they say that it takes about 16 weeks. But at this stage, I actually still haven't got my refund yet. Mm. However, it is coming very soon, because I got a call a couple of days ago from someone from the HSE saying that they were in the final stages and they wanted to confirm my details before sending the money. But honestly, I feel that delay is, you know, the HSE basically holding up the show. It's not Healthcare Abroad.
Unfortunately, that is on our end. And the reason I asked is because it's a familiar story. Mm-hmm. But that being said, you know, you might have a few payments to the credit union, but you're not out of that money as such, if you know what I mean. Now, some people might have that money available to them.
Lots of people have
lots of money, apparently. We've got billions of euro in savings. I haven't seen any of it, but that's what they tell us.
Yeah.
And obviously then you're very content with the level of care. What about aftercare, though? Because sometimes when people go abroad, they're concerned that, you know, the Irish hospital's all right if you need follow-up care. Is there, depending on what you went out for, I presume the level of aftercare varies, but the Irish hospitals are happy enough to deal with that aftercare.
Yeah, and the aftercare over there is absolutely fantastic. You know, like, I would say, for argument's sake, if you were to get a procedure done maybe in a private hospital in Dublin and then you stay in overnight and then you come back down in your family car to recuperate in your home, and then a couple of days later you're feeling unwell, and then you need to maybe go to, you know, A&E here in Letterkenny or whatever, and, you know, they don't have your paperwork and blah, 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 and it's just a whole handling. Whereas over there, you're right beside the hospital, that has, you know, provided you with the surgery, and you're recuperating, you know, for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, depending on the type of surgery that you get. And if for any reason you do need to go back for a follow-up appointment, or if you're feeling unwell, they will bring you back in a heartbeat and you will get seen.
There is an irony
away.
Here in that some people travel from other countries to here to avail of this.
Yes.
Not necessarily your specific.
Yeah, well, they could, absolutely.
But they do.
It's European-wide.
They do. And yeah. it's tapping into the private element of things.
Yeah.
So if they have any capacity to do some of this stuff, people from Spain or Portugal are coming here. But anyway.
They also actually, I should say, they offer fantastic physio as well, in terms of their aftercare for anybody who needs it. I didn't need any, you know, to recover from the hernia.
But okay, well,
for the knees and hips.
Yep, that's
they
it.
Bring you. Yeah.
So in Louis's experience, it was hernia repairs, hip and knee replacements, gallbladder removals, cataracts and ENT procedures, varicose veins, sports injuries. Physiotherapy post-surgery is also covered by the scheme. Healthcareabroad.ie, if you want to have a look at it, yours was a very positive experience. And the purpose of this phone call, and to be honest with you, you know, like, it would be fantastic if we had a health service where you could get instant care here. We don't.
Yeah.
There's obviously a commercial element to it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. As long as people aren't having to endure 18, 24, 36 months waits.
For sure.
Because your life would have been restructured with a hernia for a minimum of 18 months.
It was fab. And like the people who work for Healthcare Abroad, they offer such an amazing service. And I remember thinking, how could they be bending over backwards to, you know, be so good to you? And, like, I don't need to pay them anything. But they're actually paid by the private hospitals in Spain. So, you know, in order to avail of their services, I don't need to pay them anything. But the staff on the ground just go above and beyond. They do anything for you. They have, like, drivers who bring you over and back from the hospital to your accommodation. And those drivers are just salt of the earth. If you said to them, for instance, you know, I fancy McDonald's, would you mind driving me across town for McFlurry?
Okay.
They would do it. Like, they would do anything for you.
Right,
it's just like having your own private team just there at your beck and call. They're unbelievable.
All right. Well, there you go. That's Louise's story. Louise, thanks for calling up. Appreciate it. And you're in good form now.
Yes, absolutely. Excellent. Very successful.
Good
Thank
stuff.
You very
All right.
Much.
Where would you be now? January, February, March, April, May, June, July. You'd be, at best case scenario, a third of the way through your
And wait. I need to ring them and cancel it, but technically I'm still on the waiting list for hernia repair in Ireland, and I haven't heard boo from them since. So
there you go, because that's a level of uncertainty as well. And I would be scared, you know, if you missed a letter or an email, say it was posted, could you be removed from it? You know,
could, surely.
You know, that's the what worries people as well. So you'd be up to high dough. Listen, great to hear you doing well. Continued success with everything you do, including Letterkenny Babies. And again, thanks for calling up.
No problem. Thank you, Greg.
If you want more info, you can check out healthcareabroad.ie. We're joined now by Katie Gillen, who's a journalist with us here at Highland Radio and is also working on the production of this show today. And you are a Swiftie.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, proud to be a Swiftie.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So you've been tracking Taylor and Travis's wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk to me about that. I'm so old, I can't remember getting excited about things. So
I know.
Why does it excite you?
See, well, I saw somebody say on Twitter, and they're like, is this how our moms felt when Princess Diana got married?
Yeah, I think it probably was.
So
actually,
I think if you take into context who the most famous person at a certain time is, you know, she is the most famous woman in the world. So this was very highly anticipated. They have had a very public courtship, engagement, marriage. So this was no different. 1,000 people at Madison Square Garden Friday evening. And when they got married, a big billboard flashed up, just TNT married.
Right. Now, sometimes you can get married on a Friday here or a Thursday and it's a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
So why... Why didn't she have a Saturday wedding? She's got loads of money.
It was a Friday. Well, day before 4th of July, so maybe everywhere else was
booked
out.
What do we know? How was it a traditional wedding? Because it was in MSG, right? Which is normally for concerts and boxing. And
I guess it was rumoured for a long time and people thought it was maybe a ruse. But I suppose it makes sense because she's so famous. If she got married anywhere, you'd be able to track down and paparazzi and drones would be above it. So makes sense that people would know where it is, but the fact that it's all indoors and nobody saw a thing.
But there has been some footage leaked, though, hasn't there?
There
or
was
is
like
that
a,
AI generated?
No,
there's one of her walking down the aisle.
Oh, no, no, that's
AI.
But there were a couple of videos that were of the seating and
okay.
the kind of what it looked like on the inside, but none of the bride herself.
So is the world, the Swiftie world, going crazy for this online?
Well, yeah, like people kind of, you know, it was the 4th of July on Saturday and that really took a backseat, you know, in America. People, like, you know, that's their day of independence.
250 years old. Yeah.
People were talking about Taylor Swift. It was all people were talking about.
And I think too, because there are going to be people listening who are going to be a little bit cynical about people caring, but there is so much negativity in the world at the moment that sometimes it's nice to just focus on something that's fluffy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly what's happening right now in the world. Like, it's just a bit of, just a bit of crack. It's just a bit of fun, you know.
Who was there? What was the guest list like? Graham Norton's the only one I saw attended because I wasn't really looking out for it. But there was the Who's Who, was it?
Yeah, Graham Norton and Andrew Scott were, I suppose, the Irish attendees. And Donal Gleeson apparently was there. But, I mean, you could probably name somebody and they were there. Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks,
Paul McCartney.
Paul, and he performed, yeah.
Tom Hanks. Imagine getting Paul McCartney to perform at your wedding. That's
amazing. And Stevie Nicks as well. So, yeah.
Sabrina Carpenter was there. Jennifer Lopez. Ed Sheeran. Just the Who's Who. Just, it was such a guest list.
Yeah, yeah. Just name somebody.
Now, what about this really just being a ruse to call her a new album Independence Day when they eventually split up and it's Independence Day, I got married and now I have my independence and I'm going to do an Adele and write a full album
Don't
about...
Don't be such a pessimist.
Okay, it's just a question.
The new album will be called Married and it'll be happy
married
and joyful.
Married forever, yeah. There must be a great deal of pressure, though, trying to live a normal life in a relationship under the level of scrutiny these people have. 100%. I can't even imagine how you could...
Yeah.
And it's got to the stage now, if they go to a concert, they're behind bulletproof glass. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I suppose, like, she's been at it for so long, she knows, and he's a footballer, he's famous over there.
But I don't envy them, if you know what I mean. No. I don't envy the lifestyle. You think you should, but I don't.
No, like, every detail being scrutinised,
And not even just being able to go to the shop for milk. I know that sounds silly, but...
Just get ordered
in. It's mundane for us, but they don't have that... ability. Is there a local connection at all? We normally find some connection to this part of the world.
Yeah, well, you know, there is. So the dress was designed by Dior, which is headed up by Jonathan Anderson, who's from Maharafelt in Derry. So he's the creative director.
We're getting
of
further
Dior.
East now from us, but we'll take it.
It's Derry. So he is the son of a former Irish rugby player. And he used to work at Brown Thomas, and he has his own label, J.W. Anderson, founded in 2008, and went on to be the creative director of Loewe, which is Spanish. So now he's head of Dior, and this is only his second wedding dress, but his first for a major celebrity. So,
you know, if you think back, the president, when she was away, it was a local designer. That lady singer, I can't remember her name. You know, I do the dish ships. I do the, what's her name again? She was dressed by a designer with Daniel O'Donnell on it. I'll come back.
Oh, CMAT.
Yes, CMAT. Yeah. Sorry, CMAT, if you're listening. But we, in terms of we've there's been connections with all manner of designing from this part of the world. It often just ends up featuring. All right, Katie. Well, listen, that's that. I won't be pessimistic. I think the next album with Oh My God, We've Got Four Kids Now.
Yes,
or something
it
along
be.
Those lines.
Yes, okay. Yes, yeah. Right. We'll be singing along.
And finally, what is it so enduring about her? Is it her music? Is she a nice personality? Do you get a sense of knowing and understanding her?
I think her music just covers so many different genres and so many years that people relate to.
It's consistently good.
Yeah, and I think she just seems like a nice person, genuinely. So,
which is lovely. Yeah. As you are. Katie, thank you very much indeed. Katie Gillen there. Back tomorrow morning at 9.